Support for this podcast comes from Avangrid. Tom Turnwald runs an Ohio millwork company that was started by his father and employs his kids.
I'm in favor of wind farms because I'm committed to attracting talent to our community, and the school districts with wind turbines get resources that can make a huge difference in kids' lives.
Since 2012, an Avangrid wind farm has strengthened the economy and contributes millions to the community each year. To learn more about where energy meets humanity, visit avangrid.com. That's avangrid.com.
From the New York Times, I'm Michael Barbaro. This is The Daily. Today, the controversies began almost as soon as the company did. Stories of Uber's ruthless pursuit of success, legally dubious business practices, and a misogynistic company culture have relentlessly plagued the company and its co-founder, Travis Kalanick. A Times investigation finds Kalanick has created a company in his image, for better or worse. It's Wednesday, April 26th.
In just 7 years, Uber has become a nearly $70 billion ride-hailing behemoth, despite or perhaps because of its reputation for ignoring local regulations.
The Uber car service and the de Blasio administration were talking compromise until last week. But when talks broke down over a proposed cap on the number of Uber drivers, the app-based service unleashed a furious anti-de Blasio ad campaign.
San Antonio telling Uber it can't operate on city streets.
The proposed deal covers California and Massachusetts drivers and calls for Uber to pay $84 million in driver compensation.
Officials have ordered Uber to take its self-driving cars off the road.
Uber said no.
At first, the stories were about a startup doing whatever it took to disrupt the entrenched and heavily regulated transportation industry. In recent months, questions about Uber's tactics have turned into questions about its culture.
Uber always is a lightning rod for controversy.
Uber now has a former attorney general looking into sexual harassment claims against the company. A former Uber engineer wrote about alleged sexual harassment by her manager in a blog post.
He must be under a lot of pressure.
Uber is starting to worry about what else is coming.
Uber is dealing with yet another PR crisis.
I mean, he's a brash guy.
A CEO vowing to seek leadership advice after an embarrassing video obtained by Bloomberg showing a heated exchange with a driver over pay raise.
Uber has lost so much money. What is leading the losses?
Travis Kalanick has apologized for the incident. In a company email, he says, quote, I must fundamentally change as a leader and grow up. You know, this is a string now of these. How many times do you get to reset on it?
Well, probably not too many more times.
Uber's kind of funny because they have this issue where they seem to have garnered ill will that has been stored up for people for years. You know, like you and I use the service. You know,
I do.
I'm sure folks at the Times use it. Out here in San Francisco, people use it. It's just sort of baked into the transportation infrastructure. But at the same time, there's been this sort of latent guilt feeling around it. Like, why do I feel bad about it? Is the company exploiting workers? Does it have a negative culture? And you've sort of seen that dribble out in stories.
My colleague Mike Isaac has exposed many of those stories. And in recent months, he's been looking into how those stories come back to the company's co-founder and CEO, Travis Kalanick.
The story of Uber is basically the story of this guy, of Travis Kalanick, and how aggressive the company is. And like for Travis, it's like this fundamental concept that he's going to go hard at what he puts his mind to, no matter what it is, whether it's playing Wii Tennis, a video game in which he was the number two contender in the world at one point.
Whoa!
Or going to Uber and creating a global company worth nearly $70 billion, you know, and willing to break laws and sort of flout regulations in order to get there. The guy will do whatever it takes to win, and that's the story of Travis. Honestly, this has been what he's carried throughout his life.
So, give us a picture of who Travis is.
He's 40 years old now, but he grew up in Los Angeles in the Northridge suburb, pretty athletic. There was this incident that I spoke to one of my sources who knew him early on and knew about his childhood. he got bullied a lot in school. And so, you know, that went on for a little while. And then at one point he decided, I'm not going to be bullied anymore. And he started pushing back and then actually became a kind of aggressor and found the weak points of other kids. But I think it took a toll on him and just like how he sees adversaries now. If you don't go after them, they're going to go after you, right?
What was he like in college?
College was the typical Silicon Valley story. He dropped out of UCLA to form a startup called Scour with a few classmates.
Using a PC to download music is one of the hottest of today's computer trends.
Talk about Napster and the sort of early peer-to-peer file sharing services. Scour was that. If you recall, Napster was sued into oblivion, and Scour met much of the same fate.
Then he founded another file sharing company, right?
Bread Swish was this company that played on the idea that there were better, quicker ways to transfer files between servers.
I was brought in as an advisor from another investor. We actually had drinks at Casa Del Mar, and the first things out of his mouth is, Travis needs a little adult supervision. Are you up for that?
It was supposed to be Peter York's job to keep Travis on track.
For me, a lot of it was just trying to focus that energy to something that was positive. And I'll tell you, I did not do well at that task.
Tell me what you mean.
I gave him really good business advice. Unfortunately, all of the immaturity issues I was absolutely had zero impact on.
The problem was Travis was having some difficulty convincing big companies that this is the direction the internet was going. So he had a sort of hustle to make this work. So they started doing some creative math, I would say.
I rolled in there one day and he's kind of got a glum look on his face and pulls me in his office and says, I kind of screwed up here, Pete. I was like, what? And he goes, well, you told me about the tax thing. And of course, I didn't really respond very well. I said, you did what? You know, I screamed pretty loud.
They actually started taking the withholding tax dollars that they're supposed to withhold from employee paychecks and reinvesting them back into the company to keep the business going.
That does not sound like a legal technique.
It's actually illegal.
As soon after I yelled at him, of course, then he changed his tune. And I said, well, it was really my business partner that did it. And I was like, seriously, you just told me that you did.
And it kind of worked. Kept the company afloat. And they eventually parlayed that into a sale for $19 million.
Hmm.
And the founder became a millionaire.
The takeaway is that, you know, he's never really had to be responsible for his actions. And so, you know, fast forward to today.
Now he's involved in one of the biggest private companies in the world. And Travis, from the very beginning, set the tone, right? It's Uber is very aggressive. We're pushing into cities. We're not listening to the police or regulators, lawmakers when we're doing this. They've been breaking the law since day one.
Hmm. How much did Uber and Travis have to break rules, maybe laws, to get Uber off the ground?
Well, I mean, look at the very beginning. Essentially, what they were doing is asking folks to drive for them without a lot of the things in place that you need if you are a private car service or a taxi service. So Uber just didn't follow any of those. And Uber's justification was, well, these regulations are outdated and not necessary for us. And in typical Travis fashion, it's do it now and then we'll figure it out once we are told to.
Mike, you've also been reporting on Uber's tech tactics, you know, kind of software and engineering that it uses pretty cleverly as a kind of competitive tool. Can you walk us through a couple of those?
What I will give Uber is that you don't want to go up against Uber in a technology fight. So Uber knows how to build tools that are, I would say, scrupulously questionable or morally ambiguous technology in order to, in one case, evade law enforcement. The one thing I reported on is a tool called Grayball, which is essentially software they use to hide their cars from police if they were entering new cities and breaking the law.
They essentially put like a digital blindfold over their eyes.
That's exactly right. And it worked. They did it in, you know, in countries all over the world. They did it in China. They did it in Philadelphia. They did it in Boston. They did it in New York. It was really brilliant. And
really, really brazen.
Well, that's the thing. It was just once the amazing thing about Uber is that once they figure out that something works, they turn it into what's called a playbook and then systematize it across the company.
Mike, why would a company, why would Travis put down on paper this kind of a strategy that is illegal?
So something that's been interesting when I hear employees talk about their tactics, especially when, you know, I would talk to these former employees, current employees about Grayball or other sort of questionable tactics. And I, a lot of the time I'd be shocked or aghast. I was like, how are you guys doing this? And there's this sort of justification inside the mind of an Uber employees that a lot of the existing regulations and a lot of the cities, those rules aren't just. The laws that are in effect are not just laws, and they're essentially over-regulating these transportation markets.
That's interesting.
So we are righteously justified in bypassing these unjust laws and rules. And we will eventually show these folks, whether it's a transportation provider or a legislator or a regular person trying to get a car, that what we're doing is good in the long term. You just have to get there with us.
Hmm. So given that there's a kind of renegade, maybe illegal quality at the heart of the company, how did that approach influence the culture of the company that Travis built?
Travis, from the very beginning, set the tone, right? That culture has really sort of diffused itself throughout the company. I reported earlier on bad company culture internally, people like throwing coffee mugs at each other's heads and things like that.
Wait, I'm sorry. I got a zero in on that one.
Yeah.
Somebody at Uber threw a coffee mug at another person at Uber?
One of the people I talked to, he had a manager who was very high performing and they delivered on their metrics, but he also would have quite a bit of a temper. And so in one case, there was a coffee mug thrown at a guy's head. I think he may have ducked at the last minute. In another case, another manager was threatening an employee with a baseball bat if he didn't perform on his metrics. It was very sort of, you need to deliver. And if you delivered your numbers, you sort of had cover from HR, you had cover from the top of the company, including Travis. You know, it's all about winning.
So one of the more infamous incidents involving Travis was very recently, just this past February. What happened?
Yeah, so he was in the back of an Uber with two women that were with him, and they got in the car. They seemed like they were having a night out of fun. They were backseat dancing to a Maroon 5 song, which looked ridiculous. They get in this sort of discussion. The driver sort of strikes up a conversation because he realizes that he's driving the CEO of Uber in his back seat. And he starts complaining, saying that, look, the prices that Uber has promised have gone down significantly over the past year. And
I bankrupt because of you. Yes.
He can't seem to make the same amount of money driving. And so he has to do these 12, 14-hour days. And essentially what happens is Travis gets into an argument with the guy saying, you know, this is going to be good for you in the long term. The math works out.
What have I changed about black?
We've done the numbers and this is good. And they can't seem to come to an agreement. And Travis starts cursing at him and says,
you know what?
What?
Some people don't like to take responsibility for their own shit. They blame everything
in
their life on somebody
else. But why are you sending an email for Town Car?
Good luck.
Good luck to you too, but I know you don't gonna go far.
Things like the driver video where he's yelling at the driver, you know, I said to myself, damn, I went through a scenario like this. All he had to do was say, I'm sorry, and leave the cab. Or if you really wanted to be empathetic and sorry, you know, hey, we had to make a business decision. I mean, it would have been easy, right? Instead of yelling at the driver.
So, Peter, you're saying you anticipated that a moment like Travis being in the back of a cab with an Uber driver might occur, and that you talked to him about it?
Yeah, I anticipated some public relations problem just because of his immaturity.
And you tried to head it off?
Yeah, I did.
You know, Travis knows numbers. He knows how to crunch the math behind the economics of the business, but he doesn't know how to deal with people on like a real empathetic level. It's that made flesh. It's easy to see it right there.
Mike, what is life like for women at Uber, and how much of that do people trace back to Travis?
One woman, her name is Susan Fowler, decided to write a blog post detailing her time at Uber. And essentially, on one of her first days at the company, she had a manager talking to her about his open relationship and sort of soliciting her to be in an open sexual relationship with him.
Wow.
Very intense, obviously, like...
deeply inappropriate.
Yes. Raises a lot of questions as to why the guy thought that would be fine to do in the first place. It was over chat, so it was documented. After she left Uber, she decided this was the time to talk about it and did this huge post, and it almost immediately resonated. Other women were talking about their stories and posting online that they had this problem, and it sent like a firestorm inside of Uber. The company had been in damage control mode internally, big crisis mode. And so Uber actually has this team of women inside the company. It's called Lady Eng, which is short for Lady Engineering. They're a group of women who sort of support each other internally. And so Travis's idea was to come and have like a heart-to-heart with this group.
I think that we should like address the elephant in the room and get on the same
page. How did that go?
It didn't go great. There was a recording that leaked.
I think for years in tech, we've been saying, if there's a systemic problem there, and saying, where's the data to suggest that there's a systemic problem there? And we have the data, we have the anecdotes, we have it happening in our own backyard. When are we going to get together and say that there is a systemic problem here and stop using hypotheticals?
The question,
and not everyone believed that he was necessarily willing or even capable of change.
I think it starts with listening to your own people.
He fomented this culture inside of the company for a very long time. So how do you not recognize the type of culture you're fostering, especially if you're the CEO and hearing some of these complaints from people over time?
Fair enough. Fair enough.
Mike, do you talk to Travis ever, and what does he say about all of this?
So I've spoken with Travis. I've interviewed him maybe 3 or 4 times since I've been writing about Uber over the past few years. And, you know, I have not been able to talk to him since a lot of the controversies have happened over the past 3 or 4 months, because they don't want to put me in a room with him, which is probably smart on their behalf. But, you know, folks around him have said a few different things. One, they believe he might have actually heard the extent to which his backlash is going and might be willing to make some changes in his corporate culture and style.
I think this is all salvageable. I think he is ethically challenged. He can repair this issue, but you know, it's going to have to be the Travis apology tour and not just making statements, but actually demonstrating by actions, to be honest.
I wonder if the story of Travis is that you can't really be hugely disruptive in any industry without breaking the rules. Do you think that another CEO could have pulled off what Uber did?
If you step back, like what Travis is doing has essentially been celebrated by Silicon Valley for years, right? That Silicon Valley, I think, has a sort of larger mentality that what they're doing is going to be for the greater good, and a lot of disruption or moving fast and breaking things or whatever you want to call it means moving into older industries and doing things entirely differently in order to improve them, right? Like his aggression and his single-minded pursuit of winning is like no one else I've really ever met. I honestly can't imagine anyone else doing it like he did.
Mike, thank you so much for your time and for this really extraordinary reporting.
Thanks, man. I appreciate it. And thanks for having me. I'll see you later.
On Tuesday, Travis Kalanick's company unveiled plans for a network of flying cars that it says will be demoed in 2020 and in business by 2023. Quote, if you're not planting the seeds for 5 to 10 years out, an Uber official said, you have no company in 5 to 10 years. We'll be right back.
This podcast is supported by Amelia Perez, Zoe Saldana, Carla Sofia Gascon, and Selena Gomez, star in director Jacques Audiard's audacious, genre-defying movie, hailed as the year's best picture. An electrifying odyssey boasting tour de force performances, liberating song and dance, and bold visuals. The London Standard calls it a work of brilliance. Time hails it an exuberant ode to human possibility. And Vanity Fair raves, there is no other movie like Emilia Perez, a thrilling reminder of the limitless potential of this medium. On Netflix in the US, UK, and Canada.
This podcast is supported by ACLU. The ACLU knows exactly what threats a second Donald Trump term presents, and they are ready with a battle-tested playbook. The ACLU took legal action against the first Trump administration 434 times, and they will do it again to protect immigrants' rights, defend reproductive freedom, safeguard free speech, and fight for all of our fundamental civil rights. Join the ACLU today to help stop the extreme Project 2025 agenda. Learn more at ACLU.org.
Hey, it's John Chase.
And Mari Uehara.
From Wirecutter, the product recommendation service from the New York Times. Mari, it is gift-giving time. What's an easy gift for someone like under 50 bucks?
So in our Gifts Under 50 guide, we have this super cute palm-sized Bluetooth speaker. It comes in an array of cool colors. It's waterproof. You can bring it anywhere. I want one for my garden.
I love it. Check out all of Wirecutter's gift recommendations for yourself and everyone else at nytimes.com/holidayguide.
Here's what else you need to know today. President Trump is backing off his demand that Congress pay for his proposed wall on the Mexican border, but his administration insists he still plans to build it.
Building that wall and having it funded remains an important priority to him. But we also know that that can happen later this year and into next year. And in the interim, you see other smart technology and other resources and tools being used toward border security.
Democrats and many Republicans in Congress have resisted the president's effort to insert funding for the wall into their spending bill. That threatened to prevent the bill from passing by the end of the week. If the bill isn't passed by Friday at midnight, the federal government will shut down. And a federal judge has temporarily blocked the Trump administration from withholding funds to sanctuary cities like New York, Philadelphia, and San Francisco, cities that limit their cooperation with federal immigration enforcement.
I strongly urge our nation's states and cities and counties to consider carefully the harm they are doing to their citizens by refusing to enforce our immigration laws and to rethink these policies.
Attorney General Jeff Sessions has warned cities that receive federal policing grants that they must comply with immigration laws or risk losing the money as punishment.
Public safety as well as national security are at stake.
Finally, Congressman Jason Chaffetz and other top members of the House Oversight Committee say President Trump's former national security advisor, Michael Flynn, may have violated federal law by not fully disclosing his business dealings with Russia while seeking a security clearance to work at the White House. As part of that, Flynn did not report more than $45,000 he received from the Russian government for giving a speech in Moscow in 2015.
As a former military officer, you simply cannot take money from Russia, Turkey, or anybody else. And it appears as if he did take that money, it was inappropriate. And there are repercussions for the violation of law.
Flynn was fired by Trump after lying to the White House about his conversation with the Russian ambassador to the United States during the campaign, a conversation in which he talked about how the future Trump administration would handle its relationship with Russia. That's it for The Daily. I'm Michael Barbaro. See you tomorrow.